Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today on the program is author Ricky Bray. Occasionally, we come across an author whose own life story is as interesting as the stories they create. Ricky Bray, the author of Rendezvous Rock, is such an example. His writing actually evolved as a result of the tragedies in his life. Growing up in rural Oklahoma, Ricky's life was happily normal with his wife and three young children. All of that changed abruptly in 1978 when he and his family were involved in a head-on collision with a drunk driver, resulting in the death of his wife and two of his three children. Sadly, after the accident, Bray, only in his early 20s, was unable to cope with the loss, fell into a depression haze, and turned to drugs for consolation. All of this came to an abrupt halt 14 years later when he was sent to prison on drug charges. And it was there that he began his writing career. And we will take it from there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ricky.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, so the story of how you became a writer actually began more than 30 years ago when you were involved in this auto accident. You and your wife and children were coming home from a family outing in the mountains, and you were hit head-on by a drunk driver.
Yes, we were. Oh, it was probably about almost dark and a mile from the house, kind of the way those things often happen, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Where was
this? My oldest boy was unhurt, but my wife and other two children were both killed.
Mm-hmm. Where was this, Ricky?
It's pretty close to Porter Hill, Oklahoma, which if you don't live here, you would. But it's by the Wichita Wichita Mountains.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that the driver who actually hit you was later convicted of manslaughter?
Yes. He received a 25-year sentence and paroled after 8, I believe.
Okay. All right. So you've dedicated your book, Rendezvous Rock, to your family, and you've just to read what you've said in your book in loving memory of your wife, Loretta, and children, PJ, and Shulita, may our spirits meet again one day. You know, it's so touching, and it's just so appropriate. And we really all handle tragedies like this differently. So I'm just wondering, as you look back and sort of assess the situation, how do you think you handled it?
Pretty badly.
Really?
Yeah.
Considering?
I spun off for a few years. You know, sometimes people just kind of push on, and sometimes they fall off the track. But I recovered later.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were 24 years old.
Yes, we were all young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really unprepared for a traumatic event like this.
No, I was probably up in my 30s before I started getting a hold of myself enough to start trying to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. So what happened in that six or eight-year period?
I was go from alcohol to drugs to then I remarried and tried to start over, but it's kind of like starting over when you're about half lame. You know?
Right.
Oh, emotionally crippled trying to go on.
Mm-hmm. But doing the best you can.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you tell us a little bit about the scenario of being sent to prison. It was in 1993?
93. Uh-huh. I was incarcerated from 93. Well, I actually entered the system early in 95. If you haven't been through the trial process, can run a year or two. So I did a year in county.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of bounced back and forth there until for about a little over a year and then went into the system itself early 94, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were in that initial court process, did you have any idea of what was going to be happening with your life, that you actually were going to get a very long sentence?
You don't initially. And the human brain will always try to keep a bright light.
Right.
So, no,
denial.
We were actually into the trial pretty before it was over. I realized, no, this is bad.
Mm. So you're sitting there in the courtroom. You're hearing the judge sentence you. to 34 years in prison, which is an astounding amount of time for, I think it was a felony related to drugs.
Yeah, well, what they'll do, they'll stack several sentences on you. The prime case I got 20 years for was a marijuana charge.
Oh, wow.
But they'll stack other ones on. So I had like 2 5s, one for maintaining a dwelling, they call it. You know, because they've got different laws they can pull out of them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they can enhance it, and that's what happened.
And interesting that it was a higher sentence than the individual that was intoxicated that caused the accident originally.
Yeah. Drug charges can, in this day and age, get you more than a violent crime. It happens.
Yeah. How have you reconciled that, or how did you when you first got that charge?
It took a year or two to realize that, well, it's just how it is. There's in prison, once you get there, you realize you run into a lot of other people in your situation, and there's a lot of anger over. Of course, those in for violent charges don't look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Those in for nonviolent charges, and there's probably 50% are, and they do feel wronged, and I did too for a while. But after a bit, I realized, well, this is the way you was living your life, and that's how things go.
Do you think it's a flaw in the system that needs consideration?
I think they'll eventually straighten it out. I think it's out of the law and order era when politicians was pushing, and sometimes you get to go in one direction and you can't stop, and I think that's where we're at as a society.
Mm.
Yes, I think it's turning around now. It'll just take a while.
That's a really, really good point. Well, I'm interested to hear what your thoughts were running through your head when you actually did get your sentence.
Just shock.
Right, shock after shock after shock, yeah. It seems like for you.
Yeah, and after the record, the way I always counter things is anything that happens is, well, nobody died. You know, and I do say that to my, and it does ease shocks later. So I probably took it better than a lot of people would have just from preconditioning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell us about prison and what made you start writing there.
Well, I always thought of myself as a writer going to be. You know, I think most people in the arts are kind of born thinking that way. But when you're living a life, it never seems to happen. So when I was there, I realized, well, now you've got the time. If you're going to do that, then you might as well do that.
So you actually dabbled in writing before prison.
Yes. It's not as if I just got there and it just occurred to me. You know, it was an opportunity.
You had the time.
I'd always thought of, yes, I had plenty of time.
Well, what kind of writing did you do post or pre-prison?
Poetry and short stories, and not very well. I never did enough to become accomplished. You know, it's like anything, you have to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I did dabble, that's a good word for it. But I had never really launched in and done a novel like I'd want, or even started one.
Mm-hmm. So did you have the opportunity to read a lot and basically teach yourself how to write while you were there?
That's my folks at the time was able to send in books, so I had every writer's manual I could come across. And for 2 years, that's what I did.
Just read.
Yeah, I wasn't even really writing. I started a novel and realized, well, you know, I threw it away, and I said, I don't know how to do this. So then I got the manuals and went another route. I thought I better learn something.
What kind of reading? What kind of books were they?
The manuals.
Well, the books that your family sent in that you were immersing yourself in.
The main one was the Art and Craft of Novel Writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that really broke me through, but had inking down the bones. You know, it was from other writers. I have one from Jones, and even one Stephen King. It's a lot of accomplished writers do these manuals. And
mm-hmm.
I was using their processes and how they thought and kind of thinking through it the way they thought through it to learn how I was going to think through it.
Mm-hmm. That's really great technical advice. So what was the library like in the prison you were at?
There's not one.
Really?
But you can get, they'll allow people from the outside to send in books as long as they approve them. And they'll bring a box of books around at times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you wish, you can get a hold of them, and people will hoard them in their cells and pass them around. So there's books available, but it's not like saying the library is pretty erroneous. Most prisons don't have an actual physical building even.
Really? You know, I think most people think that there is a library, a real library in prisons, and people, you know, the incarcerated can actually go there and pick out what they want. It's not like that.
No, I'm sure there are prisons that probably have them, but I don't think I've ever been in one that did. And I've been in several, you know, you get shipped around some in 12 years. But
oh, yeah.
Law makes them have a law library, but it has nothing but law books in it.
Mm.
And they're not required by law to supply you a library, so most of them don't.
Mm. So where do the books come from?
People just give them to them.
Okay.
They're donation gifts. They don't even really, most of them don't have a fund to buy books, so they're dependent on what people on the outside give them.
So the books that are in a library aren't necessarily books that will help with rehabilitation. They're just kind of a mishmash?
It's just everything.
Yeah. Okay, so interesting. Now, while you were writing in prison, Ricky, I understand that you had a very unusual arrangement with your cellmate. I'd like for you to explain that.
Well, I was fortunate in about after 4 years or so, I ran into a, just, you know, you'll hit different cellies. But when this one come in, he was a painter, and that's all he did. Was he put in 8, 10, 12-hour days painting, and that's the way I like to do, too. I was riding real heavy at the time. So we just stayed cellies. Once we realized that he didn't have nobody hanging around him, and I didn't either, and we tried to keep everybody back as best we could, and created a kind of a quiet zone there.
Mm.
And it worked out very well for both of us. For about 6 years, we had that arrangement.
Wow, that's fantastic. Are you still in touch?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. So you were just two creative artists.
And he's still in. He was doing a lie, so he'll be there a while yet, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I send him money, and we communicate, and he sends me art.
So he must be just so proud of you that you've got your first book published.
Yes, he is. And you know, he's always trying to break out in the art, but it's hard. You can't do it in a pen.
Yeah.
We try to help him, me and my wife, do on this side, but it's just tough.
Now, when you were writing in prison, you actually were writing on a legal pad, from what I hear, because you were in at the time when computers just started going. Tell us about that writing process and now being out, having to learn the computer, and are you writing on the computer now, or are you still writing by hand?
I don't write on a computer. I'm so, you know, once you learn a technique a certain way, it's hard to shift. So I do all original work still in a notebook with a pen.
You do. That's time consuming.
I can look at those keys, and I'm not a real good typer yet anyway, but my creative, the function don't kick in right. I have to have a pen and a paper to get the right mood.
Mm-hmm. It's different when you're plunking at keys on a computer.
Mm-hmm. It just don't feel right, and the flow's wrong. Pen moves at just about the speed I need.
Yeah, you know, that's a good
for
point.
What's coming off.
As the thoughts are forming in your mind. That's so great. Well, I'm kind of interested to hear how you came to that point while in prison that you really wanted to make something. You know, so many people get stuck in that anger, stuck in the denial process. You know, there's a whole, I think, series of emotions that you go through. So can you tell us a little bit about that emotional journey and how you kind of came full circle?
Yeah, I've had actual emotional trauma, and I kind of know what it is, and prison is that. It's an emotional trauma. Because it disjoints you from everything. You lose everything you built. You lose even a lot of your family will drift away, you know, after years. But you lose all your friends and all your connections. So it's a loss system. And you go through this, a lot of the same process of denial, you know, that this can't be happening, but it is. And then anger because it's happening. And eventually you either accept or you don't. And after about 3 or 4 years, I completely accepted. You know, I took blame for, this is me too, and I can't hate the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And I might as well do something. Here I am. And I was already trying to, that's about when the first novel took off, is about the time I really said, yes, I can do this, and I'm going to. And it changed my entire attitude.
So what did that look like on a day-to-day basis, that attitude change?
It's kind of like you just wake up one day and you feel different. It was for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized, I'm not even angry anymore. And I was working real easy. you know, wasn't a struggle to make myself do it. I would just pick it up every time I had a free moment. I kept my notebooks, was always in reach, and I was going over material constantly and just felt happier and better.
And the depression lifted.
It's gone, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Ricky Bray. He is the author of Rendezvous Rock. And you can find out more at rickybray.com.
And really, I think I shook some of the depression from the original wreck many years ago. I returned more to what I was in my youth, mentally.
Oh, that's interesting.
I realized, well, you know, I was living still semi-depressed all those years and didn't even really realize it.
Mm-hmm.
I just got so used to that was my lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. You were covering it up with your lifestyle.
Yeah. And when it lifted, I could see it better. Yeah.
That's so interesting. And you came to all of this basically on your own. Like, I don't think that you received any counseling or intense therapy when you were in prison.
No, they don't. That's another misconception. They do have certain classes they require you to take for violence. You know, like me being nonviolent, they really don't even mess with you much. But they do have law-required classes, but they're currently a semi-joke, and there's no serious help.
Mm.
They'll say they have a psychiatrist, but he comes around about once a month and passes out pills. You know, that's it.
That's no real true help, is it?
Everything they do in the prison is done on a secure, you know, it's the more they mess with you, the more insecure it is, so they'd rather just leave you locked up because it's less hassle on everybody.
Are you an advocate at this point for change in the prison system, or are you based?
Yes, I am.
You are?
I was then, and, you know, I wrote a few depositions and sent to CURE, and there are people who try to help, and I've been in touch with them. I'd read the razor wire out of California, actually being able to do something, you almost have to have a little name recognition. You know, if I ever gained any recognition, I would try harder.
Mm, with your writing, with your books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think about it, and I do what I can, but the individual citizen can't hardly change the machine much.
Oh, it's a huge machine,
it's
isn't
huge.
It? Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty dispassionate. It don't care.
Yeah. So you've been out now for 4 years. Which isn't that long. What kind of changes have you made in yourself? Who are you today?
I work for my brother. He has a paint company, and I run a crew for him. And we work constantly, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
We've been real busy, and I bought a place. And I got 2 acres and a house in the country, which I'm back where I wanted to be. And it worked out real well, but I had family help.
I think that's important when you get out of prison, right? You have nothing.
Yes, you don't have a license. You have to go get your license. You don't have a car. You can't even drive down there to take your ticket. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If there's nobody there to help you, then it's a foregone conclusion. You're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm. So was freedom what you expected?
Yes, it was. For a year, all I did was work when I got out. And I worked double shifts, weekends, just, I don't know, to reestablish myself And I felt behind, too, like I'd wasted a lot of time and I better get busy. But that kept me from having to think. And then after about a year, I got emotionally involved and then married and started over again.
Yes, you're remarried. You have a wonderful life right now.
Yes, it's been good. I've been real fortunate.
Yeah, very blessed. So now with your book, had you written the whole manuscript while in prison, or did you have to tweak it when you got out?
It was done through the second draft. you know, I'd done it and redone it. So what was left was to put it in the computer and edit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my sister-in-law, Patty, she went through the process of editing again after I did what I could.
Mm-hmm. And so was this the first book you wrote in prison? I know that you wrote several.
No, it was the third one. It was the one that was easiest and quickest to bring up to print speed. You know what I mean? It was. So that's why we went with it.
So tell us about this book. It's kind of a mix of adventure and romance and suspense. Tell us about the storyline.
It's the publisher called it a paranormal romance, and I guess that's fairly close. I don't really think of it as a romance, but it is about two people who meet 15 and fall in love, and it's about the next 10 years of their life. But he eventually learns that she's in a cult of witches and that their marriage was actually a ceremony leading up to the event of them having a child that the group of witches is waiting on.
Mm.
And she knows this, of course, but he doesn't. It's part of the rule system that you know, the religion-based thing, they're kind of like a mix between Buddhism and Christianity in a way. You know, they're animistic, but believe in God and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you took a paranormal kind of a slant with this book. What is your spirituality or your belief with paranormal and mystical subjects?
Very open. Very
really?
Open-minded. And, you know, I don't know that ESP or paranormal is possible, but I don't doubt it completely either. So I could use it in the story easily enough. You know, it doesn't contradict my belief system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Remote viewing could be possible or some telepathy. I don't rule it out completely.
So this book, this storyline, though, wasn't based on any kind of a strange experience you had?
No.
Well, where did the original inspiration come from?
It started that the book's called Rendezvous Rock, and it's called that because this is where the two kids meet and are promised to meet again there in 10 years. But that comes from a story that didn't even make it, just a big rock where these other people was going to meet. And I had the rock in my head, and I thought I'd do a love story kind of setting, and I had them meet there. And then when I come up with a notion, I'd always thought they're going to meet again in 10 years.
Mm.
And then I thought, well, why? You know, if they really do, what would compel them? What kind of undertow, what kind of things are going on that would actually bring them back? And from there, I realized, well, she's a witch, and this is a ceremony thing. You know, and all the rest of it just kind of spins in behind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's interesting because right on the front cover, you have the quote that says, witches are never young. We come, we go, we return again, but we are never young. To be a witch is to be as old as the forest and old as life itself. I mean, that's pretty interesting. It sounds like you have some background in that whole realm, you know, witchcraft, Wicca.
I was very interested in religions, especially in my youth, and I had studied a little bit about the Buddhist, the Islamic, and the Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a Baptist, a functioning Baptist. I no longer go to church, but I did as a youth. And then as I branched out older, I realized, well, all religions have things to them that should be looked at. And that kind of cost me from being any one.
Mm, you picked the best, didn't you?
But I have read on everything I could find at times. You know?
Mm-hmm. And in this book, you've actually invented a completely new religion.
Yes. I was going to do it based on the Wicca thing, pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't get anything, any kind of material that it, you know, like if you needed to look something up, you can't just go to a library and, well, find out what that is or whatever. So I give up on offending anybody that really knew with my ignorance. From there I thought, well, why don't I just create my own religion and then I can build it the way I want and I will know it.
Mm-hmm. And you've actually taken a lot from different earth-based religions, some Native American influence in here, and you've called this religion the Three Circles.
Yes. Well, they worship a trinity, which kind of comes from the Christian concepts, too. But their three circles are the sun, the earth, and the moon. And they have three actual sects. So there's a sunset, a moon, and an earth.
Mm-hmm.
But they all work in concert. That's why I call it the Sisterhood of the Three Circles.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. So it sounds to me that you may be setting this up for a sequel or a series. Is that possible, Ricky?
Well, I started Rogue was going to be number two, and I got 17 pages in and realized, well, I can't do this because I had to send out the original manuscript. There's a law where you can't keep more than 12 inches of paper.
Okay.
So once I finished a manuscript, I've got about 12 inches of notebook stacked up, you know, a first and second draft. So each time I finished one, it had to go.
Mm.
And when I started, yes, there was going to be three of them. And I was going to do all three of them in a row, but then I realized I can't do this, and I went on and did four other novels instead.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you'll come back to this one?
Yes. I mean, the story's still alive in my head, and I still know what it would be. But I'm not working on it right now. I'm polishing off another one.
It's amazing you have so many books in the works. Tell us about finding a publisher. I mean, it's hard enough getting a book published in this day and age, but just having gotten out of prison, I mean, it must have been very difficult for you.
Yeah, it took about 2 years or 2.5 years before we even get, and I had, like I say, I had my sister-in-law and brother helping me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got more people on the phone, and then my wife, when I got remarried, we've done a lot of mailing. You do up letters, you send them out, you know, you just have to get to moving, and it takes a lot.
It takes so much time and effort, and you have to have real thick skin because there's a lot of rejection.
Oh, yeah, and what's really dismaying is that you don't even get a rejection about every 10th or 12th attempt.
No, you just don't
even
hear
the
back.
Even rejections are good.
Oh, no.
Well, at least they opened it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel today? Just how your life is going and having this book in hand, and, you know, you're getting interviews. I know that you've been interviewed on TV even. How does all of this feel to you today?
It feels good. I don't know. Like something finally went right, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The real thing to me was to actually get the physical book.
Yeah.
That was a very high moment. And the rest of it, you know, your sales, you still wait, you try to break out. It's an ongoing thing. But the real thrill to me was to see the physical reality of the book.
And have it in hand. And
actually hold it.
And know, I imagine, where that book started and how it started back in prison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, any plans for book signings? So what's going on with you right now?
We're doing one next weekend in Duncan, Oklahoma. They have a Border Queen Festival here where
mm-hmm.
they draw in. There'll be like 50 authors, mostly from southwestern area. They'll come out of Texas and Kansas through this region. I've done one of those before. And we've done Hastings and Noble's, Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
I've done two of each of those in a bookstore in the city. So we've probably done, this will be our eighth.
So exciting. What's the response, Ben?
Mm-hmm. I'm really nervous, Edel.
Yeah.
I'm not a real people person, and it shoves you right into that. You know what I mean? It's you're right up front. And as a matter of fact, they'll usually put you right by the front door, and you got to talk.
Yeah, you do. It's an interesting sort of a situation for an author. You know, most authors are quite introverted, and you have to put yourself out there, especially when you
go against nature.
Yeah, right. Oh, I'm sure that your writing will probably be affected by that, or, you know, some part of you will blossom because of that interaction.
Yes, everything changes you. It's all connected. But,
mm.
Yeah, I haven't started a new material lately, but I'm sure there will be a little shift.
Yeah. Well, Ricky, let's mention your website. It's rickybray.com, and information about Rendezvous Rock can be found there. I believe purchases can be made through your website.
Yes.
And you have an email address if listeners would like to get a hold of you and send their comments your way.
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us, Ricky, and congratulations on your accomplishments and your new life. It sounds like the direction you're going in is just, you know, a really positive one, and we really support you in that.
Thank you. It does feel positive to me.
I'm sure it does, and I'm sure you're an inspiration to a lot of people that knew you back in your prison days.
they do look at you kind of, when you get out of prison after that long, people that know you're kind of waiting to see.
What you're going to do.
Quite a few were probably very pleased.
Yeah, I'm sure. So are you sending a lot of copies of your book back to friends that are still in?
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, Ricky, thank you so much. All the best, as I said to you, and congratulations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, listeners, that's been Ricky Bray. He is the author of Rendezvous Rock. Very interesting book. You can find out more at rickybray.com. And I just hope you really enjoyed this interview. Ricky is a very interesting author with quite a life story and a real turnaround. So I hope you do check out his work. And we will be hearing more about him in the future. So get in on this first book, Rendezvous Rock. So thank you so much for tuning in today to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.